When I started this podcast last year, it was an exploration of my own grief. I had lost my mum, my best friend, and I couldn't imagine my life without her. I suddenly had all these feelings of sadness, anger, confusion, and guilt. I needed to understand them, so I turned to my friends and people I knew who had been through a similar experience. It was eye-opening. We cried, we laughed, we processed. That podcast helped more people than I could have imagined. I've been inundated with messages and connected with hundreds of people who've lost loved ones and realized their experiences needed to be shared. There are still stories that need to be told. This season on Death Becomes Him, I meet people who have lost siblings, spouses, parents, and children. Though the experiences differ, one thing remains consistent. Talking about it is therapy. Today, I sit down with Jennifer Rock, better known as the Skin Nerd. Jennifer is a vibrant businesswoman, a best-selling author, and social media star. Her ever-growing success is down to her hardworking nature, her creativity, and her supportive family. One person in particular influenced Jennifer's success more than most, her father. Jennifer opens up to me today about his sudden passing in 2018. She talks about dealing with the shock, going into autopilot, and how she threw herself into work in the aftermath. Jennifer Rock is in the building.
Hello.
See how I kind of jumped out of my seat when I said that?
Jumped out of your skin, Brian. Yeah.
Do you know what? When you were, and you was doing this podcast, even this morning, I'm working afterwards, I put on like tinted moisturiser because I was there with Arthur going, she probably will judge my skin.
I don't judge, but I do enjoy analysing to give advice. Is that the nicest way to reply?
Yes, okay.
But you do have beautiful skin.
If you're going to give me a good analysis now, what would you say?
Say that you have tinted moisturiser on, I can't really tell. My whole family are involved in this business, although I'm the person out front. So I remember years ago, a friend that doesn't know the Cleanse Off Mitt that you mentioned, I had launched it about 8 years ago and it was a disaster, like an epic fail. I thought I'd make the mitt, send a few out, a few tweets, and I'd, you know, just everyone would talk about it, obviously, because you shouldn't use wipes.
Of course.
And then that would be it. But that wasn't it. It was a disaster. It was an epic fail. I had mitts everywhere. I always say, if I'd have met you then, I'd be like, Brian, lovely to meet you. Arthur, how are you? Do you have an attic? Can I put some mitts in it, please? Because there was mitts in like mommy and daddy's attic. There is mitts in anyone's attic that I met. And anyhow, long story short, if I bring it back to kind of, was it 5 years later? I remember I was working in the more media side of skincare, and mommy and daddy, I have to say that I know I'm halfway to 70 and I still call them mommy and daddy. But since daddy's passed, if I started calling him dad now, I think he'd haunt me because
right.
It's who
he turned in his grave.
Mm-hmm, not happy.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that I should say mom and dad, but I won't.
Or mommy and daddy, be really Irish.
No, but I like my accent, mommy and daddy. Where am I from?
Oh, she's very posh.
Excuse me. So they were crucial to everything Cleanse Off Mitt, because when the mitt came back again, I remember daddy saying to me at Christmas Day one time, the mitt was a disaster, parked, failed, ego hurt, tail between legs, never talked to me
I'm
about
finished.
It.
Yeah.
Don't even go there. And when we were sitting at Christmas dinner, and daddy said to me, because he was obsessed, absolutely obsessed with his career. So I think that was always our go-to. Like,
see,
he
what you just
work,
said there, you said he
is, and was.
And then you changed it to he was. It's so funny because sometimes I will talk about mom and I will say, oh, mom is. And then sometimes I'll go, was.
It's a funny one. And you correct yourself. And I think it's more unnerving for the person beside you, because they're like, oh, sorry, she hasn't really figured it out yet.
Yeah.
That he's not here. But it's just habit.
She's mad.
Yeah, she's cuckoo. But probably am. So, yeah. No, so he was hugely into his career. And I think that's very much where we always had that passion and alignment. So when the Cleanse Off Mitt came back, when he said it to me at Christmas dinner, would you think about, you know, maybe giving us, I'd moved out maybe 10 years prior. My old bedroom was like a mini warehouse. Their attic was about to implode. There were so many mitts everywhere, boxes and boxes of them. And I remember being so hurt on Christmas Day because, like, I always wanted to impress daddy, you know, you just did. That was part of your relationship as being a child to a parent. And I said, right, I have to figure this out. Anyhow, was in the media, was talking about skincare all the time. And my mom said, mommy said to me, would you maybe talk about the mitt? Like, I would love to decorate your bedroom. Like, you left a decade ago. And so I mentioned it and it did really well. And daddy had just retired. And he said, look, just to get like the house back to normal, I'll post them, I'll get rid of them, however long it takes, years and years. And we sold like 10,000 mitts within 10 days.
By wow. him.
And so he knew the post office really well.
Yes.
And those were his last words. No, they weren't. But he was just posting and posting and posting. And back to Matthew in business, when you're asking what he wants to do, he was on commission to cycle up and down with his friends, being right. gangs of them down to On Post. And my dad would drive down, my mom, it'd be like, I wish we'd have filmed it.
Yes.
I think it looks, in my head, it looks hilarious. And then the mitts are stored so much nicer now, but back in those days it was stored in this, you know, those old, like, there's like storage units around everywhere and it's like derelict. And yeah, so that's where the mitts were back in the day. And daddy used to drive out every day, collect like thousands of them, put them in the car, the Renault Megane, like nothing professional, and then bring them back. And all of the mitts were done from the dining room table that was our dining room table all
but
our
do
life.
You not think that, I think the story of anyone, how successful they are, is to start almost like that, you know, and then grow. So would you say that your dad was always your number one supporter, always encouraging you, pushing you, forcing you?
Yeah, very much so. I remember going to pick tomatoes when I was 12, because I was, not that I was sent out to work, but I was a little diva and I wanted to have like a phone and all the best things. That hasn't changed. And he taught me how to like shake hands and how to eye contact and how to negotiate the best pay packet, because I was working with a lot of boys and they were getting paid like a pound more than I was. So he was like, go back in and shake their hand, tell that man. So he was always like fighting for me, I suppose. Yeah. He wouldn't do it for me, which at the time I hated, but now you love.
Yeah,
and then CV wise, he was always the person that I suppose read everything. He had a phenomenal use of the English language, to the point that now, like when I suppose the Nerd Network started and Skingredients came into fruition, which are more my later businesses that weren't a disastrous fail at the beginning that I did do correct, he taught me, I suppose, to read contracts. He came to all my solicitors, accounting, any negotiations I had, he came. He was just phenomenal because his life was business. He lived the legal.
What was it your dad actually done?
So I remember one time I actually had a huge operation. He specialised in company law.
Okay.
And I had a huge operation and I wouldn't get off my phone. I just love working. And he took the phone off me and took out the biggest book you've ever seen in your whole life and read me the Company Law Act from cover to cover to make sure I fell
asleep.
And
you're feeling unwell.
Yeah, but that's what helped, because I fell asleep then. But like the point is, he was always hugely involved in everything to do with my business. And I'm really lucky that, because I was only really self-employed for the last year before he passed away. Mm. So he passed away unexpectedly. And so I'm really lucky that I had that bond, to be honest, because had we not had that, we would have been more in like a more traditional relationship. But I'm really fortunate that I had it.
Do you think, in a sense of, now that your dad is no longer here, that he was, because I always think with myself, with mom, and thinking, well, maybe she was always supposed to go when she did, and she was always supposed to go in the way that she did, and I was always going to be in America when it happened. But you think with your dad that he almost set everything up for you, you know, because in some way, not that he didn't know, but life knew that he wasn't going to be around. He almost prepared you right before he left to read the contracts, to do all that, to give it a second go, to make it a success.
I definitely think that's a romantic way of looking at it.
Right.
Ironically, about 6 weeks before he did die, I signed the largest contract I've ever signed to date. And that contract took a year and a half to come in to reality. Mm-hmm. And that contract should have been signed 2 years prior. So those kind of things you're looking at going, oh, I wonder, and that's really peculiar. But I, like with your mom, I remember being beside Pippa. She had found out about your mom and she was going to work that day, and I was working with her.
Yeah.
So like I remember your mom, and I remember hearing the news. And it's so, when you hear someone that you think you know, because I don't really know
yeah,
you,
true.
I know of you, but yeah. like your heart is like, oh, you just feel for the person. And I remember months later, because my dad died in the June. When did your...
Mine was February 2018.
Yeah, so it was the same, a couple of months apart.
Yeah.
So I remember then you talking about it so openly, maybe let's say October, November. And I was just so taken aback, because it was beautiful to hear you talk about it in a normal way and just show your pain and your hurt. And I think that's
I was important. Very anxious about doing that. I think the first time I spoke about it properly was on the Ray Darcy radio show. And I was so nervous to do it. And we were doing a run for Rosie for my mom's charity, for the Mater Hospital and the foundation there. My mom passed of SAD, sudden allograft syndrome. And I was so nervous sitting down, and just, I don't know why. I think maybe I wasn't embarrassed. That's the wrong word. Maybe I was embarrassed to be emotional and to be vulnerable. But in a way, I'm so glad that I done it, because it's like when you've messaged me and even what you said, it's so strange. It's so, even now when I go to talk about it, I'm a talker, I still sometimes stumble with it. I think it's a realization. We have a supermarket Flowers by Ed Sheeran. It's a song that reminds, sorry, bear with me, I'm going to get upset. It's a song that will always remind me of my mom. And Arthur made us a compilation of footage and pictures of videos of mom. And we arrived today, literally outside here. We stopped the car and that song came on.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then I kind of thought, oh, just hearing that, I knew was going to stumble me. It's so weird. And I think because I was doing it so publicly, I wanted to talk about my mom in the correct, right way. And I also wanted to sound like I had my shit together. I didn't want to talk about it and people going, he's losing his mind. But what I learned was a lot of people go through loss. A lot of people suffer loss just like you and I. Some even more. And I think no matter how you come across talking about it, people relate to it. And it's just about having that conversation. Because as we said before we start recording it, no one does. Why do you think people don't talk about grief, death and loss?
To be honest, I probably wouldn't have before daddy died. I suppose until you've lived it, and they always say, walk those shoes, how can you know? I was always worried that if somebody passed away, you had to mention it. Like it was just like a polite thing where you'd empathize immediately. And I think having lived it the last 2 years, I've definitely noticed that it's a huge part of your life. So the fact that they're not there, but there's this massive void that isn't there. So it's important to, I suppose, address it. But I don't know. You said Ray Darcy. That's really interesting because a couple of months after daddy died, my first book came out and my first interview was with Ray Darcy and my book was dedicated to him. Wow. And so I knew without fail he was going to address it. And there was one request that I'd had across the media was maybe don't ask me because I'm going to just be upset.
Of course.
But anyway, Ray was like, Jennifer, and tell us about who it's dedicated for. I was like, no. So I think the most important thing is to talk about it and just address it in the way that you feel comfortable to do so. I talk about him all the time, like what would he do, what would I do. And I suppose for me there's been large milestones in a commercial, like in a business way, that I wish he was there for, and they kind of highlighted. But it's actually the everyday that's the hardest. It's seeing a walnut whip in the shop that you're not ready to see and that reminds you of him, or someone having a licorice all sorts and you're like, God, that's his. Why are you eating that? That's his. Or, you know, hearing a song on the radio, like I have a massive connection to a song. And when it comes on, all of a sudden, it's like I've decided it's this sign. And some people don't believe in signs. I perhaps sound like a Fruit Loop about signs. But I think you have to look for something. I don't believe you're just gone for forever. I think there's more than that. So you take comfort in it.
Chatting with people, seven people, you know, season one and now with this current season meeting everyone, some people are so believe in signs and some don't. So you obviously believe in signs.
Yeah, very much so. So when daddy died, so I rang him on the Friday and I had just gotten a new car. I was delighted with my life. I was ringing him to tell him all about it. And that was my last conversation with him. And I was actually going to counselling. So I'm a big believer that you have to look after like your skin, Brian, and you have to look after your body, but you also have to look after your brain. Like,
it's like
I think
you're giving
there's
me a
second
hint. Look after your skin Brian. Yeah. Shady bitch.
Your skin's beautiful.
Thank you.
Is it? I'm joking. It is. That's bad. But I remember ringing him, and my phone actually had to be off for the whole weekend. That was part of like this immersion piece that I was doing. And I remember sitting in the counselling studio, if you will, and the phone outside rang. So we had to put our phone into a box. I volunteered because my phone is literally like a third freaking limb. So like I had to give it away in order to be properly focused.
Immersed.
Saturated, consumed by. So the phone rang outside. I remember thinking, that's for me. Like it was just really bizarre. And I was like, that phone call is for me. And then the gentleman came in, said it to the leader, and she went out. I was like, oh, maybe it's for her. And I was like, no, it's definitely for me. So when she came back in, she looked me straight in the face, said, there's a phone call for you. And I said, okay. So I went outside and my mom, an amazing neighbor, like she's literally an angel sent from heaven. So she was on the phone. I don't know how she got the number because it was a landline of nobody really knew where I was. And the lady, Emer is her name, she said, Jen, your dad's. And I said, is he dead? And she said, sorry. And I said, like, has he died? And I've got goosebumps all over my body. And then she said, oh no, he's collapsed. They're working on him now. And I said, okay. And then she arranged for her husband to come and collect me because I was literally about 20 minutes away. So I remember getting into the car I have a weird thing with signs of numbers. I love numbers. So I went out, I turned my phone on, obviously I had it on over a day, and I turned it on, it was 1818. So like I usually see 1818 prior to that and it would mean happiness for me, but I saw that and I just knew this is not a good sign. Right. So anyway, the husband, who's again another angel, came to collect me and he drove me back. We're in this beautiful, huge Jeep and I'm sitting there and we're pulling up near the house and I'm like, Jennifer, just enjoy this moment. This is the last time that you have a dad that's alive on earth. Like, just enjoy being a daughter. Like, just enjoy these few seconds. And we were turning around the corner. Alan, who was driving me, said, just be aware that, like, because they live like two doors up, the estate is beautiful. They're like, you're just going to see fire brigades and ambulances everywhere. So I said, okay, no problem. And I went around the corner and so that's grand. He prepared me. And I just think from that moment on, like, my life changed completely. Mm. Because everything was like in slow-mo. It was just that we pulled up. Like, that's how it feels in my head. Like, we pulled up. We didn't pull up, if that makes any sense. Yeah. And he wasn't, like, the ambulance door was wide open. There were stretchers on the grass. The ambulance drivers turned respectfully away from me. So I was like, oh, this is not how it should be. It should be like, fast, get him to the hospital. So I pulled into the house or walked into the house and my cousin just had her arms open. So I knew. But daddy had passed away unexpectedly from a heart attack. And so I could see him in the kitchen. And so the rest of it, I don't really remember. Like, I've heard you on other podcasts say the same. Like, you had such a long flight coming home. Like, that's just, like, my heart genuinely goes out to you. Because there's just, you do so much and you turn into this different kind of version of yourself to get through those few hours. Totally. And I know everyone listening that's been through it understands that. And I think that's the hard part. So I think then when you meet other people, and everyone has lost somebody, there's, like, a pain that you can understand because there's a part of your life that's just never going to be the same again. And I think for me, it was about, like, just being there for mommy. And, like, I can't describe to you how, and it's not because, you know, when somebody passes, everyone turns into this, like, beautiful human that had no flaws. But their relationship was the most beautiful relationship you could ever have seen. Like, we always described it like Disney. Daddy used to write mommy a post-it every single Friday for 40 odd years where they fail at writer poetry. Like, they were just, they danced in the kitchen. They just were the epitome of true love. Yeah. And for me, I think my heart broke for missing daddy, but actually for the fact that she didn't have her soulmate alive anymore. So yeah. We had a couple of hours with him that night where we sat and we sang. And yeah, we were really fortunate to have those kind of memories. But from there on in, I do believe what I genuinely believe he's taught me more perhaps in the last 2 years than maybe even the 33 years prior to that, because I've had to become a little bit more responsible. I don't think, for me, I feel as much, I used to skip into mommy and daddy, offload all my issues, like, what'll I do with this person? And I hired this person, and, you know, and they'd share it. But then it does change, and I feel like I put my big girl pants on, and there's a responsibility to be there for my mom in a different way, to let her have somebody to kind of be the, you're never going to be her other person, but to be a person for her. And I think that's important. And I think that's perhaps the part that's misunderstood with grief. It's not just the person that you miss, but for you must be the same. The whole dynamic of your family changes. Like, you speak about your mom so beautifully, how she was like your everything.
Yeah, so totally.
She was the core.
Yeah.
And so it's that dynamic changes, and that's hard to relearn, I think.
Well, yeah, because you almost feel like there's someone constantly missing. What age was your dad when he passed?
67. He died just before the day before Father's Day,
right.
And then a week before his birthday. So
I didn't put an age on mom, chicken. Even though I knew her age. I never thought my mom
was an age.
She was 61. Did you have an age on your dad, or was he just your dad?
I don't know. You said something earlier, so I wonder, and I'm not like, I definitely, like, my qualifications are holistic by trade, like aromatherapy and Reiki and so on. So I wonder if I think there's more to the world than just an age, and this is when you start and this is when you end. What I mean by that is, for months prior to daddy dying of a heart attack, and, like, honestly, the fittest man you've ever met, like, walked, ate Twitter food, as mommy would call it, had his NCT, as he called it, 3 weeks or 3 months prior, where everything was checked and he was perfectly fine, and he was out gardening, like, he was an avid gardener. And I did not get that skill, Brian, at all.
See if tried your fingers were green
to
or not,
no. But I remember, like, anytime an ambulance would drive by for months before, I used to panic, and I don't know why. So we lived in the same town, so I used to ring mommy and be like, hi, just checking in. She's like, yeah, all's good. I have to go and I'm late, bye. Yeah. And I'd get myself off the phone because I was panicked.
For your mom,
yeah,
and dad.
Yeah. So I don't know. There are lots of people in my holistic world that would say that there's a part of your
soul.
Why do you think
that is?
holistic people say that it's part of your soul that's preparing you for, or perhaps there's something that you know inside. I definitely didn't. But the phone call and the fact that I really felt that phone was for me, that I have no rhyme or reason for that.
So yeah, take us back to that day, and you turned your mobile phone off in June, and you just knew that phone was for you. Why would you think that?
I have no idea. I genuinely don't.
Because that
have any
is strange.
Idea. Yeah, it's bizarre, beyond bizarre. And when we worked, I don't know if you guys ever sat down afterwards, but we, like, it took us 2 years to be able to sit down and go, right, well, where were you at that time? And trying to almost
piece
it together.
I'm still piecing it together. And it's been near two and a half years. It's gone so fast, really. And other times then it feels like it's gone so, it's taken forever. But we do, and only recently I will hear other people's part of the story. And I quite enjoy that.
Yeah.
Because that, now, you know, 2.5 years, we know, and I'm laughing because we laugh. We can now go, do you remember when that happened? But at the time, my sisters will get shivers and they'll get goosebumps and go, ah, just to think of it now, the pain that you're in and the shock. Shock can be a very good thing. I think it numbs you.
Yeah, very much so. I think you need it. Like, I remember when I think back to the funeral, I have to laugh at my behaviour because I turned into a Billy Barry kid. Because I apologise to Daddy regularly for this. And if Mommy ever hears this, I don't know if she still loves the story, but I was the chaperone bringing everyone into the house. And I was like, hi, hello. And I'd go to the coffin, Brian, no word of a lie. And I'd jazz hands at it. Like, you're supposed to look at him.
You're having a nervous breakdown by the sounds. If that were, you were my sister, I'm like, let's get this bitch sectioned. Or give her Prozac.
I was like showing him off. Like, I was like, he's beautiful.
Doesn't he look great?
But like, we had his best suit on. His skin looked fabulous. He did look like Daddy. Like, we'd put his glasses on, proper nerd. And yeah, like, but I, like, when you think back, it's just, oh my goodness. But that wasn't you. That was just you getting through.
That's your adrenaline kicking in.
Yeah, of course.
Because I was the opposite. Because I described it as being a show. And it was a show that I didn't want to be part of. Mm-hmm. And it's only now I look back, especially with COVID, has made me very appreciative of people that have lost someone they love during COVID and they've had absolutely nothing.
Of course. I remember choosing Daddy's coffin. So I turned into like the instigator. I was like business mode. So I chose his coffin. I drove up. I chose it out. I actually went to the graveyard and decided where I want him to be buried, which you're not really supposed to do. You're supposed to take the next one.
Are you not allocated a plot?
No. Well, I talked very nicely to this gentleman on the phone. But I wanted him to look out at the sea. I mean, he's going to see nothing, to be honest. But I'm going to look at it. Yeah. Or Mommy would look at it. So I suppose it turned into like we have to do the best by him that you possibly could.
Yeah.
But unlike you, I was fortunate. I was there. I saw him. I saw where he had passed away. I was there for all of that.
How was that? Because you're almost at the scene of the crime, you know, as such. How is that a benefit, do you think, in your grieving process? I didn't have any of that.
When I hear you describe it as is, I think, yes, I probably am fortunate that happened, because not that you've longer to let it sink in, but I have the memory of it. So it's like a stage that I managed to walk myself through. But when I think back, like, and not to use humor, but you have to, like, funeral, I laughed so much during those days because people, like, you're bringing up stories, you're reliving everything. And I remember the ambulance driver had come in to tell us, like, you know, we're going to, come back in a couple of hours or whatever it was they were telling us. Mommy and I walked into the kitchen and Daddy was on the floor in the kitchen, and you know, they had made him look like pretty, I suppose, and not worked on, let's say. And I said, sorry, do you want a cup of tea? God, I'm so sorry, I haven't offered you a cup of tea. And he's like, no, it's okay, pet, you don't. And I was like, one second, could you just move Daddy over and I'll make everyone tea? I'm sorry,
you're
imagine
stepping
Daddy.
Over your you father like, on you could the floor just, sorry, to make
Daddy,
a cup
you're
of tea.
You're just going to shimmy that way. But your brain just goes to, right, okay, now I have to entertain and people are going to come. And, you know, it's such, and I do think Irish funerals are beautiful because everyone rallies around. And you're right, we've had a few people be laid in beside Daddy over the last few weeks and months. And that's like the human touch, the cakes, brilliant. The sandwiches, tuna salad. Like all of that is needed, I think, to get you through
chicken
it.
Chicken curry reminds me of my mom's funeral, and now I look at chicken curry with a completely different way.
Okay.
It's so strange because everyone just sent us chicken curry. Yeah. And I don't know why they were sending us chicken curry. Maybe, well, my sisters, we eat a lot of chicken curry. I have no feckin' idea. But I was like, what's that? It's chicken curry, Brian. Go off with the chicken curry. Don't know why.
I know. I don't know. We got sandwiches. We're obviously a sandwich community.
Talk to me about when you said 18, 18. Was that when you looked at your, was it your phone you turned on? Was 1818, was that always a time or just numbers that had fun memories for you? Or?
Anyone that would have followed me on social, say for the first few years of being on Snapchat and soon into Instagram.
Oh, Snapchat, you're taking me back.
Oh, I know. Well, that they're the real days now, Brian. Yeah. But like, I loved it. 1111, 2222 and 1818 were my numbers always. And I don't know, they didn't mean anything to me. I just thought, oh, this, like, something's aligning and it's all right. And, you know, I don't know, because I'd taken a lot of gambles. Like, as I was saying earlier, mom and daddy were shipping the mitt out and it got to a stage where thankfully there was such a demand for them that I left my full-time job. At that stage years ago, I was working like the normal 40 hours a week for my full-time job. Mom and daddy were picking and packing them, and then I'd go out and, you know, be on social media in the evening. So when it got to the stage that I could work for myself, I suppose there's a lot of risks. Like, I'm a single parent, as in it's just Matt and I at home. So to be able to, I suppose, take that leap was fairly huge. So when I saw those numbers, I was like, I convinced myself, as you do, I was like, oh, this is fine, like, this right. must mean I'm going the right way. And then when I turned my phone on, yeah, it was 1818, and I just knew all of a sudden that what used to be, this is great,
such
this is right
thing.
It was unfortunately not. And what's even slightly more peculiar is that, as I mentioned, daddy was there, and I don't know who was ringing people, to be honest, but everyone was rallying around, and they're such private people. Like, mom and daddy are the most like private people. So for people to be around in that situation, when I look back, wouldn't have been what we ever thought we would do. But mom and daddy had this song that was their song always. And everyone stood around the corner and sang it. And when I asked someone to pass me the phone, they passed it in to put the song on, and 2222 was the time on the phone. I was like, oh, for goodness sake. So now I don't particularly adore those numbers, to be honest. So when I see people online saying 1111 make a wish, I'm like, make all the wishes, bring them all.
But isn't it so funny, something that you would always associate with fun or something positive, then on that day completely changed your life forever, and it flipped and it's now a negative thing where you go, oh god, no.
Yeah, very much so. And then daddy worked for himself. So when he retired, he loved work so much that mommy says she couldn't keep him away. So he set up his own company. And on Monday, it was 9:09. I really am making this up. Like, honest to God, this is factual. At 9:09, I happened to make my first phone call to ring all of his clients. So daddy passed away on the Saturday. He was talking to a lot of people on Friday. Jennifer Rock, his daughter, decides the best thing you should do is ring everyone and tell them on Monday. When I look back now, I can just imagine these four people in offices saying, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry to hear about John Rock passing away. And you are? And I'd be like, his daughter. And they were like, why are you ringing me like 24 hours later?
But maybe that was just part of how you had to do it to get through it.
For me, it was about, he gave me so much time my whole life for my career to put me on the right and listen to me. Like, I had 4 a.m. phone calls where I'd be saying, such and such happened in work, what will I do? And he, like I said, came to all of my meetings. Like, a few weeks before he died, I was speaking at the Image magazine, you know, those business beauty.
Yes.
So he came to that all suit and booted.
Proud as punch,
honestly, in the middle of like hundreds of women. And, you know, at the end, he'd always give me feedback. You speak too fast, your dialect, you need to work on your diction, your hands flap. Like, so he was just always so honest. And so when, I suppose, the only way I knew how to give back in that scenario was to take over his business until we could sell it.
Right.
So for the few weeks and months afterwards, it was trying to, I suppose, manage my own business and then manage his. So I speak differently. I have a John Rock voice because daddy's use of English and mine are totally different. I do not know where he is from, but no, it was just trying to represent him as best I could. So I think that was my way of, in a sense, saying goodbye, or trying to, because you don't, as you know, you didn't get those last words. I often hear people say, you know, when someone's unwell for such a long period of time, I wonder, like, what would I have said? Like,
I've asked
how
those
would
questions
I have been different?
To people who had lost a family member through, say, like an illness, for example, and say they're given 18 months or 6 months or 2 years. And they've said it's never really enough time because you're never really ready say goodbye. But I think in a way that, you know, you and I lost our individual parents was, it's just so shocking and it's out of the blue. And I felt like mom was murdered. That's what I genuinely felt like. And because she wasn't sick, there was no accident. So I feel like that's something I will always cope with. Strangely, I'd discussed mom's funeral with her the week before, even though she was perfectly healthy and she was cooking Sunday dinner. Yeah, I have found solace in all of that, considering how angry I was in LA in my friend Donald's house, fucking pitch black with a dog. And I'm like, but then again, having the dog was a great distraction because I had to bring the dog for a walk. I had someone else something, someone, the dog to look after. Because I can't imagine. And then I remember in LA, and this is when Donal had Alexa, and we didn't have Alexa at the time. And I was like, Alexa, play sad songs. Because I couldn't cry.
Oh, really?
I could not cry.
Are you a crier at the best of times?
I'm very emotional, mm-hmm. but I think I was just in such shock. I couldn't. I cried initially. Well, my friend Leanne said I cried initially, and she said I was like a whale. I don't remember it. I remember, you know, my knees kind of going and never feeling that before. But I couldn't cry. And then I got on the airplane and I was like, ah, if anyone even says anything to me. Over those 10 hours, I couldn't tell you. Like, we could have been hijacked. That plane could have ran out of fuel right now. I went, Brian, you know you landed in the sea first. Oh, did we? I couldn't tell you. I couldn't.
Isn't it peculiar how your brain, you think you'll always remember those things. Like, I remember Matthew was in the Gael talk. So, excuse me. Matthew was in the Gael talk, so we were actually, Daddy and I were due to drive down to him the next day, being Father's Day, to see Matthew, to kind of have, you know, those 2 hours escapism you get when you send your child away to become a Gael Gore. And those 3 weeks are going to be bliss in my life, to be honest. I was like, I'm going to be like this new human. This is the first time in whatever many years that I'm like alone in a house on my own.
You're free. And free is the word, Jennifer.
I don't like to say free, Brian, but you know, yes, completely free. But I remember I was getting driven down and then like we pulled over. I think the shock just came, and then I can't describe to you this unmerciful, like, it's just the most bizarre noise. It was like a whale, like an actual, it's just bizarre. And sometimes
it's like
I drive
an animal
back
noise.
Yeah, but yeah. Complete, and like honestly, if you ask me to ref, I couldn't do it again. But it's just complete pain, I suppose, and then a realization that things are different. And I suppose I was being very careful in the house not to cry in front of mommy and to be more, you know, we'll do this and we'll go there and this is going to happen. I'm going to take care of that. And because, I mean, I cannot imagine like
how
I feel.
How has your mom been coping? Now she's 2 years into it.
Mommy is honestly, like, our surname is so apt. Like, she's an absolute frickin' rock. She is genuinely my inspiration because the love that they had, like, they did everything together. Like, if we went out, Mommy and I used to have daddy-daughter days and Mommy and I would do a lot together. And Daddy would text Mommy to say the kettle's on and, like, they just missed each other terribly if they were, like, 3-4 hours apart. Wow. I think they spent 2 nights apart in 40 years of marriage before Daddy passed away. So, like, the first night that Daddy passed away, obviously I slept in with Mommy because all I could think was she doesn't know how to sleep on her own. She doesn't. So for me, I suppose my love slightly changed. It's still the same, but it's perhaps more of a protector mode for her to
help her
through.
Do you think you worried about her more than you worried about yourself?
I think that happens to a lot of people. I think so. I think, like, during COVID, for example, that's been my absolute realization that he is gone, because through immediately, like I said, the 909 ringing his clients and then trying to look after my own business and getting back into that swing of things, there's so much distraction when you have my job, like, you know, Japan or flying to America, like that's norm, or like, you know, going to London or, you know, working 12-hour days because I adore it. So then when COVID happened, I suppose for me, it was actually, I had no choice. Like I can't leave my house. Right. I have to face these things. And so I suppose that was a realization then for me to look at her and see that, like, she couldn't have anyone touch her. We couldn't see her. And that really hurts. That hurts to know that someone you love is in so much pain and you can't do anything, can't say anything. And I think that's hard.
Does your mom still like to talk about your dad? Or does she tell you like stories maybe about when they were dating or when they were fiancés and stuff like that?
Like, I'm an absolute freaking divil, I'll always ask. And because their lives were each other, say it was their wedding anniversary recently, and I'd say, like, what were you doing now, like 40 odd years ago, and what did you wear? And like, all the stories are just beautiful. Like, Daddy walked X amount of miles to leave Mommy a Mars bar on their drive, and every week he'd get her a Mars bar for 40 years. So I'm like, should I be buying her a Mars bar? So, but should I write post-its? Like, I'm so confused.
I know.
And like, she, you know, little things, like, it's the little things, like, she'd get her hair done and she'd twirl and he'd say, you're beautiful, darling. And I'm like, okay, she got her hair done on Saturday. I'm going to go see her that night. And I'm like, your hair's lovely. Like, I'm not going to ask her to twirl and say, you're beautiful, darling. I am her daughter.
Yeah, that's crossing the line.
But it's just trying to, like, I just love her so much. I hate that she's in that much pain.
You're trying to compensate.
Yeah,
potentially. Because you know what he meant to her and you adore her, but also your dad's not around anymore. You now only have one parent left.
I think that's a harsh realization, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is.
Because mom used to sign all of our cards from
mom and dad.
I don't think I couldn't tell you my father's handwriting. It was so strange. And now
I don't think anyone our generation does. Like when you used to ring home when you're little, did you not just ring is like and there? Your dad would answer like, sorry, is mom there? Like,
yeah. And then I'd ask mom how dad is.
Oh, is he well?
And, yeah, but listen, when we were living in America, I'd ring the landline. Hi, dad, is mom there? Mom, how's dad?
Oh, you just smoked him a second.
Yeah, our mom always fine, who's got this, who's got that. Mom would tell me more about dad than dad, dad would. Yes. Dad would always say, how's the weather? It's hot.
It's LA.
Yeah, how's work? It's okay. It's just strange. We'd always do that and stuff like that.
How is he better now? Like when you ring now, because obviously your mom isn't there to pass the phone to.
But I think now dad's had to kind of be more, what's the word? He was always willing. I don't want to feel like I'm forcing him into a situation or saying something that's wrong. My dad now probably has to kind of stand in the light a bit more in a sense if he kind of has to stand up. So like with everyone's birthday cards and stuff, like dad doesn't know my date of birth. He doesn't
tell
know
him
any,
now. Just say
he
it now,
does
Brian.
Not know. He's seven children. Dad, what age is Michelle? 38. She's 40. What month was I born in? May.
It's a
June. You know, you've got one son and like he just because back then I was born in, you know, in 78, my sister 79, Valerie 80. Dad drove to the hospital. Mom got out of the car, went in, and then dad, we didn't even have a phone. So the neighbors had phones up until when Tara was born to her, we didn't have a phone.
Right.
So the neighbor, we'd go to the neighbor at our 20p, dad, you know, make the call and dad would say, oh, your mom's had a baby girl. And he'd go collect her and bring her home. It was so old fashioned, but that's just what happened. And now he's getting better with the birthdays. He may not get the month. He won't get the date or the year. Right. Like my sister Valerie is 40 this week, September 18th.
Happy birthday.
And he doesn't even know what age she is. He goes, Dad, she's 40. She's Valerie, not older. I mean, no, because it's me, Michelle, then Valerie. He goes, hang on. So it's you, Michelle. I thought there's another one in between. I'm like, is there another one in between? Where's my other sister? It's just so funny. So he's now had to do the work of two parents. Has it changed you at all in how you view situations, how you view your relationships? Has it made you angry, more emotional?
I think I actually became less bubbly. So I'm quite a excitable, high energy character. And I think for definitely up until, I think the 2 year has been a massive milestone for me. And I think because of COVID, it maybe fast tracked things. But definitely, I think I became more empathetic towards people. So even within the company, I would, if somebody said I want to go to, I don't know, see my dad abroad, I'm like, yep, go. Because I'm thinking is it's amazing that you have that person. So whomever you want to spend your time with, once it's based on love, who am I to hold you back? Now that's not always the best answer. Like I do need people to work, but I do think
they're all just going to say it to you now when they hear this. I need to go to Hawaii to see my family.
Dad.
Aren't you from Fox Rock?
But I think it definitely gives you more empathy. But I just think I hear pain differently. So I see when I look at people's eyes more. I think that you can tell a lot by people's eyes. I don't really look at their mouth as much because I think you can see pain in people's eyes. And yeah, I think that there's definitely, like they say there's stages of grief. I don't know if there's necessarily stages that go in chronological order, but there's definitely, you go back and forth, I think. And yeah, I don't think it can't, how can it not change you? I mean, it's not just the loss. It's like what I said earlier, it's the whole dynamic of your family changing. And the fact like Matthew was so close to my dad, so he called him Papa, and he would have gone into my mom and dad after school every single day to do their homework. So his version of family and traditions at Christmas, like I just don't enjoy Christmas. And I promise faithfully that I'm going to enjoy Christmas this year.
Right.
Because the traditions change completely. So because it's all kind of entwined. So yeah, it does change you, but a lot for the better. I think it allows you to have a little bit more of an understanding. It definitely grew, like I grew up, I think I probably needed to. Like you'd think having a child at 17, you'd maybe grow up then, but no, apparently it took a bit longer. So yeah, I think it's positives by and large. And like I said, I think he taught me more because when I'm in business situations now, I try to ask myself, what would he do? What would he say? So he was not a man of many words. And at the end, he would just come out with this unbelievable sentence. Whereas I'm like, blah, 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 blah. So I'm like, oh, maybe I should talk less and see how that goes for a while. So I definitely tried to look at it the whole situation differently, I suppose.
Are you religious?
Not really religious. I believe there's something, definitely. I don't know what I necessarily believe there is. Like so I pray, I chat to him all the freaking time. Oh, his head is wrecked, Brian.
Okay.
Driving by the graveyard, I'm like, woo, okay, can help this today, or I'm late, can you make sure the buses aren't in my way? Like the poor man has leaned on for everything. I mean, the bus
sounds
is
like
away.
You're using him a bit.
I think it's good. I mean, I think that's only healthy, to be honest. But no, I definitely chat to him all the time. I have what I call window time most nights, where I look out into the abyss and like there's stars in the sky. So that's kind of my 5 minutes of like peace. That's just my own time. And that's when I chat to him. But I wave like as I go by the cemetery every time. And I don't know if you believe in this or not, but I went to like a medium type person last year.
Yes. This is still something I'm
not sure.
Not
sure myself sell it either. To me. I'm not going to sell it to you, right? But I will say when I went, the things that were said to me were so specific that it's bizarre.
Rachel Gurry said the same. Yeah. She lost her husband, Daniel, really tragically and super young. She went to a medium and she had heard stuff that only she and Daniel would have known. So are you in the same position?
Well, it's just simple things like who would know that I stick my hand, this is not the best way to drive, disclaimer, out the window.
Okay.
But you should have two hands on the wheel at all times. Please, can
you
I
should.
Just, yes, and it was just momentary.
We're not
it's like I'm sneezing
bad driving here, people.
Never.
No.
Moving along. So I have my hand at the window and I wave at him. And the medium said that so daddy came through and he's like, oh, I love that you wave every day. And I'm like, okay, that's really peculiar because nobody
who
would
else
know,
that. Yes.
It's so little. I don't say that to my best friend. How are you today? Well, I was waving out the window for 4 seconds. So those kind of things. But I do believe that there's something out there. As I said to you, I believe in signs to some degree. I don't believe you're just gone. So I don't know. I'm not necessarily religious per se.
So if you were going to say he was in a place, what place is he in?
I honestly don't know. I just hope it's a happy place and that he's not in pain and that.
Would you get signs constantly from him or do you get signs when you need them?
No, I've given up asking for signs because I do think it sounds like I'm using him. Like, okay, anything,
yeah, a little bit.
I used to at the start of like, if birds fly to the left of the car, it means I have to do it. No bird flies. I'm like, okay, seriously? And then the bird flies to the right. I'm like, well, I disagree with you anyway.
Yeah,
so I stopped all that. But no, when I got into the car on the Monday morning to go and choose his coffin with his brothers, a song came on the radio. I think I said earlier that I'd actually just gotten a car on the Friday. So no one had seen the car yet. I didn't know how to drive the thing. I'm actually a fantastic driver. Please do know that. This is not really...
Both hands on the wheel. You are.
Anyhow, so on the Monday, this song came on in the car and I just shut it off. Like music was not part of my day or didn't want to hear it. And so the next day I got into the car to do whatever I was doing. The song came on. Oh my goodness. And I couldn't get it to stop. And it wasn't on my Spotify, on my phone. It was just coming through the speakers. And then I remember I used to do Ireland AM every single Friday morning and daddy would watch every single Friday without fail. And by the time I'd come out of the studio, take my phone off airplane mode, he'd have said, you know, your feedback is, and this was great, but perhaps work on that. And, you know, he was just fantastic. So I remember it was 2 weeks after he had passed that I said, I have to go back and do TV. And so I went and I did it. And I was terrified. Like I was afraid I was going to cry or something, because I knew they were going to say something like, you know, sorry to hear. And so anyway, so I had myself braced and this freaking song came on the radio again. So I was like a bull going into Ireland AM and everyone's passing sympathy. I'm like,
yeah, you're angry.
I'm like, don't talk to me about it. I'm like, there's a song in my car. I'm like, oh God, love her. She's lost it again. So anyway, got back in the car after it, bawled crying, to be honest, because I didn't have, that was the first time I probably noticed that I didn't have something from him.
Yeah.
That would always have been my norm.
Realization.
And I was like, where's the text message? And mommy was amazing. She does it every time now, but she's trying to, I suppose, fill in where he would have. But the song came on. I was like, oh my God. So I pulled over to listen to the song and it's Justin Timberlake, Mirrors. I don't know if you know
it. Yes, I know that one.
So if you actually look at the words, they're beautiful.
So another fan of me.
Yeah, that's exactly how it
sounds.
Yeah.
I sound exactly like it.
It was like, you're coming through the radio.
Thank you, it was me.
But like if you look at the video then, because I rang someone and I was like, oh my goodness, this song actually has like massive emotional and it's somebody that's died. And when I looked at the video, it's like an elderly man and he's passed away and the woman is kind of like missing the man and they're like a mirror image of each other. Mm. So that song has come on a couple of times at the most bizarre.
And you find solace in that?
Yeah, because I just think it was quite particular. And the song itself is just specific to grief. So it's just, it's all a bit too uncanny.
That's when I said it to Alan Hughes. He had said he doesn't necessarily believe in when you cry, you feel better afterwards. What do you like with emotions and expressing them?
I think in general, yeah, I'm so emotional as a person. Like watching Home and Away, it's devastating for me. Like it's just such an upsetting program.
I stopped watching it when Sally left.
Oh, did you? Yeah. Oh, 1991.
Yeah, exactly. I was a child.
Well, I'm still really hip and I watch it in 2020, right? But I'm definitely emotional. I'm totally in touch with my emotions as a person, I think. But when it comes to grief or comes to daddy, I probably shut down a little bit too much. So I think I'm at the stage where, if I'm being honest, I need to look at going to counselling or really addressing it.
And I'm actually surprised you've... Have you been to therapy or counselling since you... I'm surprised you've not, because you mentioned, you know, going before. Why not now, probably when you would think you would need it more in your life than ever before?
I don't think I was able to. I think there was too much. I think my shoulders had become larger. There was more responsibility that I was putting on myself. And so to go and deal with the emotional side, I couldn't. I had to park it. And then just, we have to do this. And this is where we're at. And, you know, tick the boxes and keep going. And now I'm at a stage where I don't think that's going to serve me for much longer. And it's not fair on anybody. So do I cry about daddy? No, I get really sad. And sometimes I'll just, like, tears will just fall out of my eyes and I'll miss him. But yeah, I don't, I think there's death. I think I need to look at it. And I think that's fair. I think 2 years on, it's okay to not have. Maybe I've I'm just excusing myself.
There's still certain stuff that I wouldn't want to sit down in front of a stranger and discuss my feelings about my mom or how I'm feeling. I'd rather talk to my friends, my family, my husband, even doing this podcast. I've always believed talking is therapy, and I'd rather do that and sit down with people who've gone through a similar situation.
I don't know. I think it's therapeutic to talk. There's no doubt about it. And especially when somebody has been through it that you can relate, because I do think that there's definitely obviously common ground. But I don't know. I do think there's a lot to go to someone who understands what questions to ask and what to draw out. And if it doesn't, it can only do good. I mean, it's not going to make it worse. I mean, they're still passed away. So for maybe it's coping techniques or just an awareness piece, I suppose.
That's... Do you think you've used work as a distraction to almost put your grief on hold, that you just threw yourself into running your own business, running your dad's business, and kind of doing everything else, looking after your mom, making sure Matthew's okay, your brother's okay? You're almost like holding everything together so then you don't have the realization of, shit, my dad, I'm never going to see my dad again.
I think that last sentence, like, that still freaks me out to this day. So someone said to me yesterday, like, oh, I'll never get to meet him. And that, I'm like, like, that just takes my breath away. Because, so that suggests to me that there's some part of my body that understands it, but doesn't want to necessarily fully, completely believe it. But did I immerse myself in work? I love work. So I think I didn't know how else to handle it. And because work and he were so, like, the same thing for me, like, you know, all my conversations with him would be about work and advice and meetings and, you know, even down to, like, what should I wear and what would I word that and how'd you write the minutes of a meeting and anything. So I think because then when he passed away, to manage his business, and I just wanted to do the best I could for him. Like, one of the last conversations we'd had was about Skingredients, which is my skincare range that launched a year ago. So a year after he passed, and he was talking about, you know, IP and trademarks and getting the CRO. And I was like, oh my God. And I was so cross and I was like, leave me alone. I'm in the fun stage. It's going to be red. Okay. And it's going to be clinically proven because it's this data. And he was talking about the serious part. And I think because for me then using work was a way to be close to him. Right. And then during COVID.
Yeah, actually, yes.
So that was probably... Yeah, yes, it probably was escapism to a degree. I think it'd be wrong to say otherwise, but I think it was a way to be close and to try to use every milestone became so much more important to me. And then when Skingredients launched, something happened a week or two prior and we needed a little bit of money, and there is money there that wouldn't have been there had he not passed. Oh, wow. And so he, I believe, got Skingredients to launch on the date.
When you think about it that way, like, he's still so he's part guiding of it. You and...
Yeah.
And helping you.
That's how I choose to see it. Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Talk to me about COVID. So do you think COVID maybe helped you grieve a bit more because you didn't have... And I'm not going to say your work is a distraction. Of course, you love your job and it's huge for you and you're very successful. But not having those demands about work maybe during COVID helped you grieve more, because that's the only thing you could do because you'd no distractions.
Brian, do you know what I did that every single person in the country did while COVID happened? Is I have a new garden. So, like, I always had a garden, but I didn't know I had one. It was just like a muck out the back. And people would say, how are you successful? And I'd be like, well, it depends on what you think success is. Answer one. But secondly, look at my garden, because it was just Oh my God, horrific. So during COVID, myself and my beautiful neighbour, there was a whole row of us, we just decided to get new grass and paint, and it's beautiful now. You should come sometime.
For tea.
Yes, for tea, darling, because it's good for the
or
tea.
Or maybe champagne.
Good for the skin, champagne.
Thank you.
So, but that made me feel quite close to him because he passed away whilst gardening. So I have like his twine, or I'll have like his hammer.
But that's
or
something you probably wouldn't have.
Never.
Like your garden could still look a mess if you didn't have that time to do it. Maybe by doing the gardening was therapy for you, because you weren't working, you were probably letting your emotions down, and just simply doing that could be healing you in your grief, because you just said you feel closer to him.
Yeah, very much so. And then my book, my second book, is due out, and that is definitely like Daddy and a Book is always going to be a reminder, because the book came out so soon after he passed away. So a lot of the deadlines were around the week of his funeral, and I remember going out and sitting, like, I'm sure I looked bizarre, but you know yourself, in a cemetery anything goes, so you kind of get away with it. But like the second book is out, and I went and I read it to him. Like I sat silently, don't worry, I didn't stand at the end. And
I was just thinking, okay, someone lock her up again.
But I don't usually get a lot of comfort from the cemetery. I don't believe he's there. I believe he's kind of with you always.
I can relate to that, yeah.
Yeah, but I do think, you said that your mum said, and I agree, I think it's nice for others to have somewhere to feel they can go to see mum or to see dad or to whomever.
I'd rather talk to a picture or hear a song or have a cup of tea myself and just think about her. Yeah. As opposed to specifically going, that means though, because I traveled pre-COVID quite a lot, mm-hmm. it would mean I could only really be close to her at the grave.
Yes.
Because I lived in a different country. Maybe that's
why
the association with
yeah.
me.
Yeah, that makes sense though, doesn't it?
Do you feel you second guess yourself now, maybe business-wise and personally, because if your dad was almost like that person that was kind of guiding you, and you know, every appearance on Ireland AM, you'd look to your phone and talk better or slow down or don't wear that. Have you had to second guess yourself privately in your relationships, but also business wise because he's not around guiding you and telling you what to do?
I think what I've
not
done,
telling you, advising you on what to do.
No,
or telling
you. Telling. Okay. No, what I miss the most is like the debates and the like, because he was so opinionated, so I need to have my absolute best interest at heart. So I think what I miss the most is the fact that, and what I brought into the business, are people that have my back as a person as opposed to the company's back. So I have amazing people around me, like my MD or my head of operations, that care about me and the business. And I think that's what was missing for a little while, that it was all about the business, but your dad is going to care about like how you come across and how will that look for you. So I think I've made different business decisions because he's not there. I don't think I second guess myself. I don't think I can. I think I just have realized he's not. There's been a couple of things in the last 2 weeks that I just am annoyed he's not there. And I'm not cross at him, but I'm cross. But I don't know who I'm cross at. I'm like, oh, I need you. Like, there's nobody else in the world that can answer that.
I think being angry is a phase. It's part of the grieving process. You have to be angry. You're allowed to be angry that your dad was taken from you in the circumstances that he was. And when I came to terms with the fact that I'm allowed to be angry, I can be angry every day if I want. No one can tell me not to, because she was my mom. She meant so much to me. If I want to cry every day, I will. If I want to walk around my house naked for 2 weeks, I will. You know, it's because
I don't think it gets you away with everything, Brian.
It does. Well, that's what I told Arthur. Don't tell him. But I think myself, and when I didn't put limitations on myself, it really helped me. How it's like anyone from us that are doing it. You know, I'm saying what worked for me. But then if you feel like that's not helping, seek help from someone, you know, a counselor, go see a doctor if you feel like you need that. But for me, talking, not putting limitations on myself, because there's nothing out there. You also can't copy someone else's path of grief that they were on. What works for you may not work for me.
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Yeah, 100%. I think it is. For me, it's just talking and making sure that he stays alive. And I think because sometimes I can see it in people's face, they're almost unsure as to how to manage that. But my answer to that is it was a huge part of my life for 33 years. Just because it's 2 years on, it doesn't mean he's any less a part of my life.
No.
If anything, I said this to Mama the other day, I probably think of him more, because when he was fine and fit, like, you know, I'm in work, he's doing his thing, you're away. Whereas now there's an awareness of, oh, he's not there, and how is mommy, and you know, you're thinking differently, so it just reprograms your brain. But I think talking about it, and you're right, everyone will find their own way, but I have to find humor, I have to talk about him regularly, and that's really my only ways, I suppose.
For anyone that will listen to this episode that is currently going through grief or has just lost someone recently, anything you could say to them, anything that helped you or that worked for you?
I do. I genuinely believe that talking about it and not trying to, like, as you just said, don't look at others, don't feel that you have to feel a certain way. I find so much comfort from this podcast, but it took me a while to be able to listen to it. And then like I listen to Nikki and Armoran laughing, or I listen to Pippa and I'm like, oh goodness, because you can relate. And I think that it is about finding people that have been through it, but also that haven't been through it, and knowing that. I think in my situation, because he's my dad, for me, it's more about supporting my mom and trying to find positivity. I think like I feel so much for Rachel, like it's, I do believe it's slightly different when it's your partner. And I think that that realization to be there for her and that I'm not living her pain sometimes can be a little nugget to make me feel just one reminder. And just
when I done the first season of the show, I was only exclusively chatting to people who had lost a parent. And then we came back to do the second season. I wanted to open it up a lot, and Rachel's name was a name that just kept coming up. Thank you so much for this lovely conversation. I always appreciate people talking so honestly, especially on a public platform. But I think you're like me, you believe talking is therapy.
It definitely is, because when you hear yourself say something, it either sits inside you like, oh no, I do actually feel like that, or no goodness, I actually don't. And then I have this journal that I write. That's one thing that I do, not as much recently as I used to. And I found it recently, and looking back to how I felt at that stage versus now, I think it is worthwhile knowing that I don't think you don't miss them any less, but you do find ways and you do find a new norm. And at the time you don't want to feel that you will, but then when you look back, you realize that you can. So you actually feel stronger in yourself. That's interesting. That you're resilient.
You wrote some stuff down back then, those 2 years ago, and is there a vast change in
massive?
Wow.
Just in how you look, and how, you know, there was definitely probably a little bit more confusion, and we hadn't had his result of his post-mortem, so you had so many questions in your head, you're not sure, you're confused, everything's different, whereas now it's settled into a new norm and you found a rhythm, so it's going to be totally different.
We were the same with mum. We didn't know what it was.
I remember going to collect daddy's death certificates. I drove into town to collect it from the birth and death place. I don't know what it's actually called. And
I think it's called that.
But they just hand you this certificate and you find out there. And I'm like, oh my goodness, there's no envelope. There's nothing. That's how you learn. So I think I suppose if I was to listen to this podcast, and if I was someone that hasn't gone through it and I wanted to support a friend, I'd probably just say, talk to them all the frickin' time and just allow them make it their norm. Because like choosing coffins or choosing plots of land or going to collect death certificates are not something that anyone wants to do, no matter whether you're 12 or 92. So it's just about making it a normal conversation, because unfortunately it is part of life.
Yeah.
And so everyone's going to go through it, and just having that awareness that it'll be you or it's someone else, and what can you do to support.
Two things. Thank you so much for guesting on this episode with me, and secondly, thank you for the comments regarding my skin. This is just who I am. This
you
is just
woke up
me.
Like this. I don't believe that for a second.
100% I did not wake up like this. I am the vainest person you will ever meet.
I'm just disappointed that you don't have the rollers. I was expecting to see that.
I thought, you know, I am working it later. I just thought, you know, I'd give you a tone down version. I didn't want you to feel insecure around me.
I understand. No, you look beautiful. Beautiful
Jennifer
skin. And
Rock,
thank you
so much.
Me.
No, thank you. I like to think that we never truly lose someone. We learn from them and live our lives to make them proud. Just like I live in a way I know my mom would have loved. It's clear Jennifer's father would be hugely proud of all her achievements. Next week, I talk to Lisa Colquhoun. Lisa's story is a really tough one. Her life was perfect. She had two young children and was happily married to Christopher. He had just been promoted. They had their dream house and everything was going to plan. Then, out of the blue, Christopher fell ill and sadly passed away. Lisa discusses life with her soulmate, dealing with such unexpected tragedy, and how she finds the strength for her beautiful children.
And people will so unselfishly say, when I hear them talking about their stories, well, why not me? And I think, no, but why me?
Yeah.
You know, why me? And, you know, it feels like I've got such an unnatural life at the minute.
Yeah.
You know, where I kind of don't know where I fit in. I have amazing friends and family who always look out for me to make sure that, you know, I don't feel like that lost person and I don't feel like that third wheeler and stuff like that. But it's hard not to, because I'm like, but why was my family robbed of a daddy and a husband and a best friend and a brother and a son and all those things?
Do you still ask why now?
I think it's too hard. You know, I think, you know, if I really sat down, you know, part of me too, and part of the reason I'm able to get up and get going is because sometimes I just have to think, this was God's plan. And, you know, if I start to ask why in terms of just life, why in life, if I start to ask why in terms of medical, then I don't know that I would have the same strength every day, because there's too much to think about there.